Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Addisk, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events for Wednesday, June 10th, 2015. Thank you for joining us this afternoon. Wendy Wilson will be joining us in just a few minutes right after the market report. Good afternoon, Al.
Hi, Melody.
A lot of things to talk about today about the markets, and markets are going nuts, and gold, I can't say gold went nuts today, but at least it's up $10.30 at $1,187.70. Silver's up 8 at $16.12. Platinum is also up 8 at $11.18. Palladium up 2 at $7.47. The USDX today is trading down 0.53 at 94.64. Crude oil took a big pop today, 1.12, back up over 61 at 61.26. And the markets just loved all the news coming out today. The markets were up 235 points today. I knew they'd add those few little ticks to it to make sure that it was 18,000, right on the nose, 18,000.20 at this point. I might still clear a few points here in the next second or two. The NASDAQ was up 62 at 5,076. S&P 2105. 10-year yield up 0.06 at 2.48%. You have the euro at 1.13, up 0.40. Germany, man, just was up almost 2.5%. Germany, London was up a little over 1%. Hong Kong markets and Japan markets were basically unchanged. So an interesting day in the markets with the high numbers, and we'll talk about that after the first segment of the program. As on Wednesdays, we always enjoy having Wendy Wilson from Apothecary Herbs on the program. Good afternoon, Wendy.
Oh, good afternoon, Melody. Hello, Al.
How you doing, Wendy?
I'm doing okay.
You sound like you're having some doubt about that. Are you doing really okay or just pretty okay?
You sound like a professor I had in college that asked me if I like mashed potatoes, and I said, well, they're okay. And he goes, you don't like mashed potatoes? And I said, yeah, they're okay. Yeah, I'm okay, Al.
All right.
We're going to talk
what
about...
What are we going to talk about today?
Well, health challenges of the 21st century. How's that?
Sounds like something from Buck Rogers. Does it have anything to do with Dr. Zarkov? Ming the Merciless?
Maybe. I don't know. I'll see if I can get him for you. But, Europeans are having some epidemic problems over there, and it may be over here soon. 38% of their populace is affected, and it involves the conditions of anxiety, depression, and insomnia and dementia. And the new health authorities are combining all these conditions into one category called brain and mental health disorder. And the British newspapers are reporting that only a third of the patients are obtaining any kind of therapy or medication for these conditions. So the problem is really putting a strain on their medical and their employment systems, because the majority of the patients aren't fit to work. So billions of euros are spent on this. And it's an epidemic, and people aren't getting the treatment, so they're going on disability and welfare. And this is a social health care system. And as our social health care system becomes more entrenched here in the U.S., it's quite possible we're going to face some similar problems. So I thought I'd mention also pharmaceutical companies are actually turning their attention to other maladies for drug research. So there's really insufficient research and development, and there's not enough funds to continue any work for any therapies for behavioral or neuroscience. So what the pharmaceutical companies are doing is they're putting the burden on governments or charities to provide funding for these areas of their research, and that's putting a strain on the system. And until that happens, there's going to be this huge treatment gap for these disorders. And in Europe, clinics in Germany are facing closing their doors. According to one of the directors, Hans Witschen, of the Institute of Clinical Psychology at Germany's Dresden University, he says there's a long wait for treatment, averaging several years, and entails no modern therapy. So is this what the U.S. is going to be facing? This is what I'm asking, right?
I don't think so. I don't think so. I think we can deliver drugs faster than that, and that's what the big pharmaceutical firms are interested in. Just come up to the door. Be like a drive-in. We'll set up something like an abandoned McDonald's or whatever, and you can just drive up, and they'll give you your meds right there.
Okay, well, what Witschen did, he led a study, a three-year study, and it entailed 27 European countries involving roughly about 514 million people, about 100 different mental disorders, neurological disorders were in the study. And what he said was that these conditions are a major cause for death, disability, and economic distress worldwide. And he expects these statistics to expand by 2020. So his full report is in the European College of Neuropsychopharmacology, if anybody wants to look it up. But I want to also mention the European Commission had some public surveys, and it indicated another problem that's on the rise, and it's musculoskeletal disease. There's 150 conditions under this category, and it's a progressive painful disease disorder. So the category involves things like joints, the spine, arthritis, osteoporosis, and back pain, things like that. And on the survey, most frequently reported for the middle-aged Europeans, back pain, and for the older adults, it was mostly knee pain. And this involved 50% of the populace in Europe. I thought that was huge.
50% of the entire population, or 50% of the senior citizens?
Well, it was 50% of the population they surveyed. Okay, so okay. And this was a survey that the European Commission did. It's a public survey, so I'm not really sure how many surveys went out, but their statistic was it involved 50% of the people who answered their survey.
You know what that is? Well, at least part of it is you have people that sit on their butts too much, and I'm a good example of it. But you've got to get out and get some physical exercise. You've got to get that physical exercise, keep your cartilage functioning properly, and if it doesn't, you'll have bone-on-bone contact, which is painful, and
Yeah. Well, here's another thing that's really interesting, what's going on over there in Europe, and which is kind of creeping around globally everywhere else. Since health has been pretty much a hot topic all over the globe due to the cost involved, there are countries now that are saying, you know what? Good health is an asset. the healthier the populace, the wealthier the nation. Just dawned on him, I guess. So what affects the health status of a country or a nation is countries want to know, and they're monitoring more closely the health of their populace. So they want to hone this right down, not to just a general region. They want to get it down to the very towns in their segments. So to do that, the European policies require some new terms and definitions, and they need to be standardized according to care and assessment. So what the governments are doing over in Europe is they're really particularly interested in three variables. One is self-perceived health. In other words, how is a person assessing their own general well-being? They want to know what you think about your health. Number two, they want to look at the chronic morbidity segment, which is an assessment of long-standing illnesses and health problems. And then number three, the disability or limitations on a person, in other words, their ability to carry out normal functions, activities, or work influenced by a health problem that has been longer than 6 months. So what this assessment is called, Al and Melody, is Global Activity Limitation Indicator, or GALI for short. And it's going to be used to calculate a citizen's worth in, quote, healthy life years. This is what they're calling it, right? Okay?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So all the countries are giving this health assessment to their populations, very high status, because it's going to affect their health policies. So it's a kind of a prediction factor, and it's also going to tell them how much money a citizen will cost them and how much money they'll make during their lifetime. So
Obamacare has gone global.
I know. I think the policy would be better accurately named Human Commodity Life Assessment. What do you think?
I agree.
Right.
I agree.
So
the whole thing sounds like they're going to figure out how long you are going to be productive. And guess what? When your shelf life is exceeded, you're going to be recycled.
Well, and, you know, their governments, they prefer to call this a social protection, right? Right. Social protection is about what is good for society in general and the planet. So the government's going to confirm a person to be healthy if they satisfy the standards of their multidimensional point system. And the point system have a completely balanced physical, mental, and social well-being in order to be considered healthy. So, for instance, Al, if you have some back pain or anxiety or you don't like crowds, then your global activity limitation indicator score is going to be lower. So your health scores will be calculated by your computer using what they call core health indicators, and that will arrive at your, quote, healthy life year score. So if it's determined that you would need long-term care at some point, this could actually affect a lot of things and not just insurance premiums. They say it's going to affect not only healthcare services, occupation and labor, living conditions, government assistance programs, and education and training. So at this age of data science, apparently the more information compiled on people, the more control the government has over them.
Of course. And so, what you're saying is as they compare you to 100 medical disabilities or disorders and 150 muscular skeletal disorders. I mean, good God, do you really think there's 150 different muscular skeletal disorders?
Well, see, medicine likes to chop you up into segments. They don't.
I understand that, but this is ridiculous. I got a sore back. No, you've got. No, you don't. You don't have a sore back. You've got, you know, anti-disestablishmentarianism squared or something like that. We've got a name for that. This whole thing becomes. And if you have enough of these problems, your insurance rates are going to go up. You're telling me. And if your insurance rates go up, you won't be able to afford enough. You won't be able to afford to live in the same home you might otherwise have chosen. You won't necessarily be able to get the same food you were looking for. I mean, your costs are going to perhaps go up under the situation. They're going to make you pay because we think you have disease number 116. Right?
Well,
so that's going to cost you an extra $50 a month in health insurance.
Well, you know, this is why the Bible says, you know, the wicked grind the poor's face into the dirt, right?
I understand.
Yep. Well, you know, data science is involved in all this, and it's basically a collection of information. So there's lots of institutions now, Al, giving degrees in data science. So the job description for data scientist is supposedly a high-ranking professional with training and curiosity to make discoveries in the world of big data. But that's just the print version. Really, a data scientist exhibit intense curiosity, and they're data hackers, and they're analysts, two elements that make them pretty powerful. Bankers will use them to reduce fraud. So if you have a background in, like, social sciences, it's a plus. And most of the data hackers have these strong social skill sets, and they may have degrees in things like computer science, math, systems biology, ecology, and economics. But whichever field they're coming from, they seem to have this gift of taking unstructured data and turning it into structured data to analyze. Hey, guess what? The Harvard Business Review called the job of data scientist the sexiest job of the 21st century. So think of data science industry as exploring you, Al, finding your behavioral patterns, your social connections, in order to predict your future. So data science will have, you know, been grooming these people in this age bracket. They don't care about privacy. They have no problem profiling folks. So many websites
sounds like Microsoft.
Well, a lot of websites will offer you free accounts to help you connect with others, and they'll take all that data and they sell it, and then they build algorithm programs with it. And some of the most data-driven companies are Google, Amazon, Microsoft, Walmart, eBay, Twitter, Facebook, and LinkedIn. So big data is in its infancy right now, but it's gathering momentum. And the founders of LinkedIn said this: there's a shortage of data scientists. It's becoming a serious constraint in some sectors because demand is ahead of supply. Hmm.
Well, what do you have to be a data scientist?
Well, data scientists, they just love technology. They love programming. They also, like I said, they have some sort of super connection or awareness of how all these things interconnect. And I don't know, they have it all in their head.
I get that. I follow what you're saying. And what we're really talking about is they are capable of connecting the dots in ways that are original. And the average dolt who's in Congress or in positions of power, they don't have the same creative capacity, and so they want to hire these guys, and they will connect a couple of dots, and you do it once in your life. Say, ha ha, I'm genius, I just connected two dots. And Microsoft moves in and they say, you're right, you did connect the two dots. They add it into their programs and they don't need you anymore. I don't know if I'm getting my point across. I don't suppose I am, but it's just disturbing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they're looking for creative people, and if you are creative, you can help Microsoft take over the world. What happens to people once they've made their calculations about where you should go and what, how you should fit in? What happens if you fall off the tracks and say, no, that's not for me?
Yeah, well, I mean, obviously, under the bus with you.
No, I think
I mean,
so.
I think it is. I think it's. I mean, it, things are moving so fast, so quickly that, you know, there was a bunch of millionaires that just had a meeting in Monaco. It was called the Financial Times Business Luxury Summit. They're all disturbed. Okay, they're all disturbed because they see this upset in the status quo. And they think there's this tension between rich and poor, and it's going to escalate. They think that the introduction of robots and artificial intelligence is going to fuel mass unemployment. And we're getting rid of the middle class. We'll have the very rich and the very poor. It's going to be horrible, they said.
Well, I agree with them. I think the robots are going to be one of the causes for the 150 muscular skeletal diseases or 100 mental disorders. What's bothering you? Well, it's CP3PO. That's my problem.
R2.
Because he took my job.
I hear you. I definitely
agree.
We live in extraordinary
times, and it's up to everybody to take care of themselves. That's perhaps the lesson here. You have to learn to take care of yourself.
That's it. I mean, the more you can do for yourself, the better off you're going to be, and the higher your score is going to be.
That's what I'm looking for is a high score.
It's almost like your health score is like your. It's almost like your health score is going to be almost as important, or even more important than your credit score.
Want a high score, but not too high. You don't want to get so high that somebody starts asking questions. What's going on with that guy over there? He seems unusually healthy. You don't want to be too diseased. You don't want to be too healthy. Just right in the middle, and maybe they'll leave you alone. Why don't you give us a little contact information?
Sure. Absolutely. They can call Apothecary Herbs for a free product catalog on immune-boosting and organ-cleansing products to make them stronger and more powerful than they ever thought. And it's 866-229-3663, 866-229-3663. And for those with internet access, thepowerherbs.com, thepowerherbs.com. Thanks, Al. Thanks, Melody.
Thank you, Wendy. It's Wendy Wilson from thepowerherbs.com, 866-229-3663. I'm Alfred Adisk here with Melody Cederstrom. We'll be back in a moment on Financial Survival. Please stay tuned.
If you have a heart condition and emergency rooms and medical doctors are not an option, you need our emergency heart attack kit. 5 concentrated liquid formulas enter the system in 60 seconds to protect your heart muscle, strengthen heartbeat, increase circulation, relieve pain, and make breathing easier. When seconds count, you want all the help you can get with our emergency heart attack kit. Easy to use and portable in a 1-pound compact kit for your purse, briefcase, or car. Call Apothecary Herbs now for your emergency heart attack kit toll free. 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at thepowerherbs.com.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Adisk here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival, and the program is brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver. What's next, Melody?
We have a nice little special today. We're going to continue those. We have a few more left. of those Canadian maple leaves priced at $18. And so we have a few of those available if you want to get 25 of those, which is one tube, or you get 25 of them in the Canadian tubes of silver coins, silver maple leaves, and one 1/10 ounce American Gold Eagle, and includes your shipping charges. And we've also been running a special today. I was on Beth Ann's program, the Common Sense Coalition program this morning. We ran this package, and it also included a subscription to her newsletter that goes out, I believe it's bi-monthly, it goes out. So it's all included in this package of $625. Give us a call at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Visit our website, DGScoins.com. Make sure you sign up for our weekly newsletter also, and you can listen to our radio programs archived there. Today, Friday, I guess, Al, the House is to vote on the trade bill. And the Republican leaders say the House will vote Friday on trade legislation, a top second-term priority of President Obama. The leadership made the announcement on Wednesday, today, after a closed-door GOP meeting. Rank-and-file members emerging from the session said the leadership is not claiming that it has the votes for passage, at least not yet. And coming out from behind closed doors, people trying to buy people to get things passed. And, you know, the funny thing, they've done this before on other legislation and so forth, that, they just won't let it, they won't have a final count until they do get the votes. So
they may have the final count before they take the vote, Melody. Ideally, that's the way to run this railroad. We count the vote now and we take the vote later. Are they working on, is this vote going to be on whether or not Obama gets fast-track authority to negotiate this? It's not on the treaty itself, but it is on whether Obama has fast-track negotiating authority.
That is correct. He wants the fast-track powers, so he cannot make offers in the proposals. Congress can ratify or reject, but they cannot change. And so, you know, there's not only do you have the Trans-Pacific Partnership, you have Japan, Malaysia, Canada, Mexico, and a few of the smaller countries, but you have the European Trade Agreement that's being worked on, and I believe one that's TISPA. So, I mean, this is I just can't believe that this GOP is behind it, and Democrats are fighting it.
Yeah, I know. The Republicans who were going to, why did people vote for the Republicans in the last election, Melody? Did it have something to do with refuting programs that were advocated by President Obama? And it turns out, oh no, we're going to work with President Obama. It's the Democrats that don't want to work with Obama. This is all crazy.
It is.
And, you know, I was, the political cheer, lie to the left, lie to the right, stand up, sit down, lie, lie, lie. Some of you might remember that from high school or a variation in high school. They posture as if they are one thing or the other. But most of the time what they pretend to be has nothing to do with what they are mostly. I mean, there's some truth to their postures. There's some truth to their appearances. But there's not enough truth to get in the way if there's a dollar to be made, right? People are conservative Republicans unless there's a dollar to be made being doing something liberal. And people are staunch socialists unless they can make a buck doing something conservative. And the fundamental reality is the politicians appear to be more interested in feathering their own nests than they are serving the American people.
Here's an interesting little piece of news I found today, and it doesn't mean much, but it's just another sign, and it surprises me the relationship between Obama and the Pope. And today the Vatican formally committed to share tax information on U.S. citizens. Yes. Now the Vatican and U.S. officials signed an agreement in which the Vatican is committed to comply with the 2010 U.S. law designed to encourage, some say force, foreign financial institutions to share information about U.S. account holders with U.S. tax authorities. Now, you know, they say this might just be a symbolic measure since there's only about 1% of the little over 15,000 account holders at the Vatican Bank that are U.S. citizens, or about 150 people. But the Vatican's decision to sign its first intergovernmental agreement with the U.S. was part of its long-term strategy to ensure and promote legality, transparency, and ethical behavior in the economic and financial fields. And so, you know, I do find that interesting. And, you know, you have these agreements that are being made anyway without anything that is, it's just...
Well, you know, I look at the agreement, and one of the things that crosses my mind is, who came up with this idea? Somebody sat back and said, hey, why don't we cut an agreement with the Vatican? And everybody else, first thing they say is, oh, that's crazy. And they say, well, maybe not. Maybe we could cut a deal with the Vatican. We could get another 150 people to tax.
I know. I mean, it's
kind of insane. And then the Vatican says, oh, sure. We're gonna spy on our account holders so to protect the IRS or the United States or whatever. It's just they claim to be isolated and alone. You know, they independent, an independent church. At least that's the impression I have. I'm not Catholic. And yet here they go entering into a treaty like this that just binds them up with the existing system.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, we know the U.S. started out with Switzerland, forcing them to release the information on the accounts of U.S. citizens for tax purposes. And, of course, laws have been changed that there's penalties and fines for banks who refuse to give up this information. And it's bigger than just getting the tax information on 150 people.
Yeah, I know.
And,
you would almost, it almost has to be something else, because it's not worth, it isn't, the game's not worth the candle unless something else is going on here.
So, just another interesting piece of the puzzle. And you have the EU today. They committed $133 million in investment aid for Latin America and Caribbean nations at a summit. Now, here you have the European Union. You have Greece that's going broke, Italy, Spain. And they're going around and saying, hey, we got some money for you people, for Latin America and the Caribbean nations. So I just found that another interesting. And they're looking, again, as probably for whatever reasons they want for this transatlantic cooperation that they're looking to. Maybe they're just trying to get in there before China does. Oh, what countries have China not contacted yet? So we'll go and help them. I don't know. But, the world is dividing. The world is countries are
competing.
Being divided. Yes,
it's certainly competing. And it's certainly not good for the United States. There's no way we're going to compete with third world labor and maintain our levels of the kind of employment we've had in the past and the kind of wage scale we've had in the past. It just isn't going to happen. And the only way we might have been able to do that is just maintain relatively high tariffs. We're on the borders of the United States, make our own TVs, make our own cars, make our own washing machines, and we sell them back and forth to each other. We don't worry about selling to foreign countries. We don't worry about them selling to us. You know, it's perhaps an overly simplistic approach, but there's no way we can maintain anything like the American dream when we're competing with third world labor. And it's great for the third world. I mean, if we're going to have global free trade, in theory, they're going to have jobs, they're going to have income. It might not be much. I don't doubt they'll be mistreated, underpaid, and the rest of that sort of thing. But at least it's better to be underpaid than not paid at all. They will advance in the sense that China has advanced. It doesn't mean that they're going to be, you know, they weren't going to become a number one economy in the world with a number one standard of living. That's not going to happen anytime soon. But their standards will go up and our standards will go down. And then we will wind up on a global plantation where there won't be much difference between whether you're working in the United States or working in China. Assuming you have a job at all, not all the jobs have been taken by robots, make the same wages here you make at the Yangtze, Peking. You know, we'll be working for Peking wages. And it's just wrong. We gave away. We had, you know, when I was a, again, I've said it 100 times probably, but when I was a kid, we were the wealthiest nation on earth. Now we are the world's greatest debtor. How did that happen by accident? The answer, it couldn't have. We didn't go from the number one to the number one, the wealthiest country on earth, to the number one debtor on earth. It didn't happen by accident. People knew what they were doing, but they didn't care. They said, yeah, but we can do this now. We can manipulate things now, and they will reelect us to Congress in the next election. And they won't figure out what we've done for another 10 or 15 years. And they all just laughed and had another cup of, you know, another martini or whatever. But they've been selling us and selling us and selling us. And on one level, you can't blame them. Because we, the people, have insisted on our right to be as dumb as a box of rocks. We've insisted on the right to trust people who have betrayed our trust repeatedly, and we'll trust them again and trust them again and trust them again. And we've lost, as we talked about it the other day, we've lost our capacity for moral outrage. And this, it's interesting and fun to point a finger at the politicians and complain about what a bunch of thugs and gangsters and immoral SOBs they may be. But the truth of the matter is they wouldn't be that if we the people had not been entertained into ignorance and apathy. We waste our time watching Dancing with the Stars and similar programs. And in doing so, we've guaranteed ourselves to be ignorant. And given our ignorance, we don't even know how to resist. We don't even know. It's, you know, taking our rights and our property and our future is like taking candy from a baby, because all we know is what's on TV tonight.
And in defense of that, I do believe that that agenda was created so that the people were placed and conditioned to be unable to.
No, I understand.
So, I mean, the picture is bigger. Yeah, you're absolutely correct. You know, these politicians wouldn't be where they were at if the people hadn't become so dumbed down. But that was all part of the agenda. And they allowed themselves to be dumbed down without questioning anything in the authorities and so forth. They didn't learn how to say no and why and inquire into what is going on. So, and, you know, human nature is what it is. And those that, were behind the agenda to promote the conditioning of the people, knew there wouldn't be any resistance from the mass population. So, from the GDP, but
well, that's what they're counting on. We see traces of it.
They counted on it, and then
educated over the internet. If we care to be, you can be educated.
Al, you're giving these people the only
you care to.
If you care to, but if you're already dumbed down and you're already in this position of falling into line with what you're being told, do you think that they're actually going to seek out the truth on the internet? No, they're going to go to all their game stats, their football pages, their Facebooks, their social network, their, you know, that's their another entertainment. And certainly if they do learn anything, it'll be by chance and by, you know, dumb luck, by stumbling on to something that they actually read. But if it doesn't involve some sort of a animated cartoon on a video, you know, most people aren't going to look at it.
Yeah, it's unfortunate.
It is.
The whole thing is so bizarre.
It is.
I've been trying to put pieces together for over 30 years, and you get into this deep enough, and even as much as I've done from my perspective, you know, some people would say you haven't done much anything, but from my perspective, I've learned a great deal. I understand things that the vast majority of people can't even believe, let alone understand. And I myself, I look at some of the opinions I've reached over the years, and you sit back and you say, how is this possible? Right? I mean, it is some of the things that I'm about 98% convinced are true, they even strike me as astonishing.
Mm-hmm.
And we live, this is, again, you know, we say it all the time, but live in interesting times, extraordinary times, maybe end times. We'll watch and see. Let's take a commercial break. Melody and I will be back in a moment on Financial Survival. Please stay tuned.
Financial obligations or relationship problems have you feeling stressed out? When life is too much to handle, use Apothecary Herbs' emotional stress formula. Feel calm and more in control with herbs especially combined to provide the organic nutrition your system needs to help you cope. Complete instructions for maximum benefit and a money-back guarantee. You've waited long enough. Call Apothecary Herbs now. Toll free 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at the 3Ws dot thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Folks, I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival, and we are lamenting the current state of, I don't know, political activity in this country. Both parties, both major parties at the top have been captured by forces, from my, in my opinion, that are working at odds to the best interests of the people of the United States of America. And where do you go? What do you do? We were talking during the break. You know, it would be nice if you could pack your bags and you could go to a foreign country. Not because it's going to be good forever, but maybe it'll be, you get another 20 years before they turn into some sort of a police state. But I was listening to one man, one of the speakers, or one of the writers that we talk about once in a while. He and his family moved down to Costa Rica. And they were down there for several years before their grasp of the language reached a point where they realized what the Costa Ricans were saying whenever the gringos, you know, were around, but they didn't think they understood what was being said. The Costa Ricans hate the gringos, and they're just waiting for the whole system to collapse. They know it will. And when it does, then they're going to break some heads. And when the man and his family began to realize how much they were hated and despised living in a foreign country, they said, wait a second, we're coming back. And he's moved back to Texas. Right, and I understand that. It's kind of a fool's paradise. You think, I can be an expatriate and I can move to Uruguay or Argentina or who knows where, the south of France or, you know, Spain or who knows where. It isn't going to work well for you. It's almost, you know, you become a target because you are an outsider. And people are going to know you've got some sort of wealth. Otherwise, you couldn't have moved in the first place. You may have gold, you may have guns, bullets, rifles, whatever. You got to somehow establish yourself and work for your security within a community, right? And you've got to find other people that are like-minded, and you've got to learn to work together. And for a lot of us, that's not easily done. We tend to be loners. We tend to be isolated, independent, asocial, antisocial. We're not inclined to necessarily get yourself in these social circumstances where you have to depend on other people. But nevertheless, we may be coming to a time when that's going to be one of the most important attributes you can have if you want to survive difficult times. And I know that the way I'm speaking right now sounds as if some people sit back and say, well, the man is obviously paranoid. Well, you know, I'm concerned. I don't know that I'm paranoid, but I'm concerned. And I'm looking around and I'm trying to be reasonable in terms of what I see and what I think about. And these are the, you know, some of the conclusions that you come to, and not easily. You know, these are painful conclusions. I would like the idea. I mean, I would like the idea of being able to just kick back and get down to the beach and do a little surf fishing. And sort of go into that retirement phase of your life, you know, where your golden years. Well, on one level, I'd like to do that, and I'm old enough to do it. But as a practical matter, I expect to keep working until they nail the lid shut on the box. Plant me. All right? I'll still be working right up until then. I don't know what I'll be doing, but I expect that I will still be working one way or another. There's not a relief from this, and that's part of the problem. When we look at the problems that we at least think are headed at us, coming at us, it's not like a bump in the road. It's not like, we're going to hit a big bump. Now, hang on, everybody, hang on. We're going to hit the bump. And then you hit the bump, you're passed, and you're okay. Can you really look at the world right now and sit back and say, I think it's going to be a lot better? We're going to have a little difficult time here, but it's only a bump in the road, and then things will get a lot better. Does anybody think that? I don't doubt some people do. Maybe a lot. But I'm unable to entertain that. I look at it and I think, oh my gosh. We're coming on some difficult times, and they're not going to be short times. They're going to be long times. And we're going to have to be geared up mentally where we can deal with those kinds of persistent problems over, you know, who knows, decades maybe. So, you know, I envy my parents. I think they were probably the luckiest generation in this country. They were born during the Great Depression, basically. And the world was just, it just got better and better and better for them throughout their lives. Just a certain amount of dumb luck. You come from a low spot, Great Depression. Then you go through World War II. Then where the United States is essentially running the world after World War II, and everything's going great for us, and say, yay, yay, yay. And my parents had a great life. They didn't really understand what was going on, in my opinion. Their generation, there's a book that the greatest generation, I think that's nonsense. They weren't the greatest, they were the luckiest. If ignorance is bliss, they were the most blissful generation this country's perhaps ever had. And now, here's the next generation, mine, and the one that's following me and so on. And we have to clean up the mess, or maybe just survive the pollution. And you look at it, you think about it, you say, I don't know. Can we do that, Melody? Are we going to come out of this? Do you think it's just a bump in the road, or do you see a more long-term problem?
I certainly see it as a long term because, you know, we've certainly seen too many changes in order for it to be short term. And, you know, we have a problem. And, you know, we got to this point because people are unable to deal with problems. I mean, it's so how can we fix a problem if they don't know if the community as a whole, this country, can't deal with problems?
I think part of the
go ahead.
I think part of what you might be talking about here is that we're dealing with problems that are completely foreign to our history, our culture. We don't have a way where we can point back and say, well, we had the same problem back in 1950, and now we can apply the same solutions we did then, and everything works out fine. We're dealing with different kinds of problems that this country has never faced before. For example, illegal aliens pouring into this country, in part because our government refuses to protect our border, in part because we have population levels that are beyond anything that the world has seen or imagined even 50 years ago. And these create pressures that are extraordinarily difficult to resist. And then we have cheap transportation, which allows people from Central America to essentially decide, I'm going to the United States. I'm going to bust in and do what I got to do. That wasn't even conceivable to any significant degree 50 years ago. And now it's not a problem. And what do you do with this? Do we have a solution to this problem? Do we have a solution, and do we have a solution that could work? And because we've never seen these kinds of problems before, we don't have a history. How do we deal with it? It becomes bewildering. And we wind up just locked in place. Kind of apathetic. You know, we are condemned by our apathy, by our ignorance, but also by just don't know what to do. What is the right thing to do?
And you have to acknowledge the problem.
Well, I understand. Yeah, and when you say acknowledge the problem, you have to look at the problem from a perspective of not just what is the problem today, what is it going to be 5 years from now, and 10 years from now, and 20 years from now? And what will the consequences be of these various problems? How will they change this country in ways that we really don't want? You know, you look at some of these things, do we really want? Can the nation absorb and deal with some of the problems that we have right now without becoming something different? And we've already seen it. I mean, we are. Where does the Constitution fit today? We are so different from what the world the Founding Fathers lived in. And part of the reason for that, of course, is their world. I've seen reports where the Founding Fathers had more in common with the pharaohs in Egypt than they do with the people of the United States today. Technology and whatever, it has all changed so much and so rapidly. Founding Fathers, they'd be comfortable in the pharaoh's society in Egypt back thousands of years earlier. It hadn't changed that much. Now, it's changing so rapidly. It's hard to make up your mind. I sit back at times. We have new options on the computer. I'm fascinated by them on the one hand, but I don't know. Is it wise for me to waste my time trying to learn a new technology on the computer, a new software on the computer? Because I know it'll be obsolete in probably 24 months. Do I need to learn this right now? Am I really going to get a gain out of it, or shall I just stay ignorant? Because things are changing so extraordinarily quickly. And what can you do? I mean, this is the ride you're on. This is like going to Six Flags or Disney World or, you know, any of the great amusement parks. And you have found yourself on one of these rides and, uh-oh, this one may be rougher than you planned. Huh? Well, what do we do? I guess partly what we have to do is just kind of when the roller coaster heads down the next slope, we just throw our hands up in the air and say, "Wee!" You know, I guess maybe we have to learn to enjoy it as best we can. But it doesn't mean that we can be foolish and imprudent. We've actually got to, in my opinion, take it seriously, get ready, plan, prepare the best you can, and get right with the good Lord and, you know, hope and pray for the best and watch what happens. But it is a scary time. If you care to be scared, this is a good time. This is an easy time to be scared.
Be prepared, not scared.
Yeah.
Don't be scared, be prepared. Yeah. So, yeah, and you're right. I mean, that roller coaster ride, it can be a thrill as long as your seatbelt is on.
You know, I went over, a friend of mine and I went to they have a Texas State Fair every fall here in Dallas. And a friend of mine, he's 71, I'm 70. We went over and we got on one of these rides a couple of years ago. And the thing, I can't describe it to you, but I think it had about four arms on it, and you could probably put 8 or 10 people on each arm, and this thing goes up and down and whirls around and does that sort of thing. And when we got down there, when we got on the machine, my friend got into the seat next to me, and one of the guard came over, the custodian, the operator came over, and he had to push on the arm, the parts of the seat that hold you in, had to push in it, and I heard it lock. I heard it click on my friend's seat. And mine never did. And next thing you know, we're whirling through the air. And I'm not kidding you. This was a good ride for a 19, 20-year-old kid. It was more than that for someone my age. And I am hanging on to the sides of this thing because I'm afraid that maybe the mechanism that holds me in place didn't latch properly. I doubt that the machine would even run if it hadn't been latched properly. All right, but nevertheless, at the time I was concerned, I can just remember, I was hanging on, boy, and I don't care how fast that thing whirled around, if the safety bar or whatever, if that thing broke loose, I was still going to hang on until that thing came to an end.
But you were laughing.
Yeah, I wasn't laughing, but I was definitely interested, all right? It was an exciting ride, and that's kind of where we are today, in my opinion. We are at that where got to hang on tight. This is going to be an exciting ride, folks. And we, all of us, just have to be prepared. Enjoy it the best we can. Do the best we can. We are facing great challenges. And they may not be immediately apparent, but I believe they are going to manifest in the next, we'll see them, in the next couple of years. We're going to face challenges where it will be incumbent on a lot of us to stand up and speak out and try to do what is right and try to show other people this is the right way to go, because I guarantee you there will be voices that will mislead and try to get people to do things that are almost certainly wrong, contrary to their best interests. There'll be persuasive voices, they'll be hard to resist, but you and I are facing a time of testing. And we'll see who has the strength, who refuses to compromise, who may even have a positive effect on this society, this world, this nation. I'm Alfred Adisk. I'm here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. We'll be back tomorrow. In the meantime, the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Frank, the producer. Bye-bye.
All day and pay the bills I have to pay.
Ain't it sad?
And still there never seems to be a single penny left for me.
That's too bad.
In my dream, I have a plan. If I got me a wealthy man, I wouldn't have to work at all. I'd fool around and have a ball.
money, 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 always.